The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
More right-wing candidates than ever before are running in the forthcoming local and European elections. There'll be a number of relatively new parties on the ballot papers and plenty of first-time candidates. I suppose immigration has been the one unifying topic they've been campaigning on, but what are their other policies? Some of them have been labelled as far right in the media, but are they really so far from the centre? Paul Connolly is an investigative journalist. He's the host of an exclusive News Talk podcast released just today. It's called Inside Ireland's Rising Right. And Paul joins me now. Good morning, Paul.
Morning to you, Pat.
Why did you do this podcast? What gave rise to it?
Yeah, sure. So it was for two reasons mainly. The first was, I mean, we're hearing it all the time these days, aren't we? We're hearing far-right involvement in anti-immigration protests. And I'm very curious about all of this as a journalist, but also I'd be talking to friends and family. And the two questions that would emerge most often, most commonly, would be, but who are these people? What is the far right? And was there a point at which it first got its foot in the door into Ireland, into Irish politics? I was looking to answer that. But then, as you said as well, more right-leaning candidates and politicians than ever before are running in the local and European elections, some of which have been labelled and branded as far right. So I was fascinated in that distinction. And also, you know, if there are to be far right candidates, running for election, well, then obviously people have the right to know what those views are, extreme or otherwise.
Mm. Now, the people that you featured, there are quite a number of them. How usual or unusual is it for them to talk to mainstream media? Do they run a mile from mainstream media? And equally, does mainstream media run a mile from them?
Yes, for the most part. But equally, a huge part of the right-wing community in Ireland, and to a degree, the far-right community in Ireland, and there's a very important distinction to make between those two, mm-hmm. which I'm sure we will make, but the media are essentially the enemy of that, because anybody that has been labelled as being in any way extreme, in any way radical, Pat, whatsoever, they believe that is the fault of the colluding forces of the government, authorities of all kinds, and then the mainstream media. So for the people, for the seven individuals that I speak to across the series to have spoken to me in the way that, given the access to us that they gave to us, we spent obviously considerable amounts of time. It was extremely rare, and they made it very clear to Reddit that they did see us and the mainstream media as the enemy.
Typical on this programme, if I was interviewing a candidate, it might be 10 minutes, full stop, thank you, best of luck, goodbye. You spent rather more time with them than would normally be possible for someone like me on this programme.
Yes, absolutely. It's obviously a documentary format, so we had that luxury. And for, you know, the vast majority of the people that we spoke to, the contributors, we, you know, went to their homes, spent some time with them. At the very least, we spoke to each of them twice. And the idea was not just to get the surface level stuff, Pat. It was to find out who they are, what drives them, their motivations, what led them to these core beliefs and principles. And then ultimately, of course, to drill down and find out what it is that their policies would be regarded as moderate. And then what are the slightly more extreme ones and how do they get themselves there?
Now, you talk to many of the different people on different subjects, but let's just explore a few ideas. Now, we'll hear first from James Reynolds. Who is he?
James Reynolds is of the National Party. Now, I was going to say he was the leader of the National Party, but there is a leadership dispute there as we speak at the moment. But James is a really interesting character, Pat. He is a farmer from Longford. The first time I went down to see him, actually, he rang me 2 minutes from the house saying a calf has given birth to twins. So I spent 2 hours with him, my knees in the hay, trying to save this calf's life. But his views range from moderate to very controversial. And he also has very specific views on mass immigration and to a degree is anti-immigration.
Let's have a listen to some of what he had to say.
We totally against mass immigration. Mass immigration is a totally different thing. That's what we have now. Mass immigration is just where any number of people, for example, 20% of the population in this 26 county state is now non-Irish.
That figure is the most up-to-date one we have, by the way. According to the 2022 census, the number of people who usually lived in Ireland but were born elsewhere stood at around 20% of the population.
the character, the soul of the, that's not good for.
So that I think is the crux of what some people won't agree with and won't understand. Mm-hmm. When you say that is not good, the colour and the character of something, the fabric of society is changed. Yeah. What is it very specifically that you think isn't good, James?
What I grew up with, the Irish character in those towns.
Like what?
Were the people who settled and lived there were the same nationality, the same people, belonging to the same country.
Why is that so important?
Very important, because it defines what a nation is about. That's what the essence of nationalism, to put that people, their sense of belonging. This is the Irish homeland. We have no other homeland. If we allow mass immigration unchecked and we don't stop it and reverse it, what we have then, we run a serious risk of Irish people being a minority in their own homeland. That's a form of colonization. That's colonialism. We were colonized before. And that's why the National Party used the term plantation.
So essentially you were saying that the Irish people are being replaced.
Yes.
And that replacement theory is one that runs through the right wing in many different countries, the idea that other people are going to replace us, the indigenous people. Of course, we're Normans and we're Vikings and we're all sorts of Mongols in ourselves, and Saxons, I suppose. Now, a lot of people might find themselves half agreeing with James Reynolds.
Yeah.
But when it comes to denying the Holocaust, that's when you're really right out on the wing, isn't that so?
It is, absolutely. This is a conversation that I got into with one of the contributors to the programme. Again, very interesting chap, Philip Dwyer, one-time postman, now calls himself Pat, a citizen journalist who reports in the stories that mainstream media simply won't. He has a very sort of in-your-face style where he goes out and he films people and then posts it on social media, and sometimes people contribute to him as a result. They can do that. We met a couple of times, really interesting exchanges. And this went to slightly darker territory than even I expected when he said and was questioning whether or not the Holocaust happened.
Do you think the Holocaust didn't exist or didn't happen?
Do you?
I think it happened.
Show me. Tell me how it did.
Okay. So I've just said I do think it happened. Mm. What's your position on it?
I'm asking you. You're going for another gotcha moment. I'm asking. I've been doing research on this over the last 6 months.
Okay.
And I find it very fascinating. Okay. Now I want you to tell me where or how this Holocaust took place.
Do you or do you not believe that it happened?
How did it happen? Tell me how it happened.
Why are you dodging the question?
Have you ever read any of this man's books?
No, but David Irvine, should be very clear.
It doesn't surprise me.
We should be very clear that David Irvine is known as a Holocaust denier.
What does Holocaust denying mean?
Denying that it happened.
This is, you know
I
what?
I would have thought that was fairly straightforward.
So, you are so woke. Holocaust denier.
Yeah.
The mere fact, you know, it's illegal to deny the Holocaust in certain countries.
Okay.
Does that not worry you? Would that not concern you that it's illegal to have an opinion on something?
Okay.
Would that not worry you? And it's the intimidation that's used by people like yourself and your channels or your media outlets. Imagine somebody saying that the Holocaust didn't happen. Wow, he's a bad person.
Why won't you just tell me whether or not you think the Holocaust happened?
I'm not.
And if what you say next isn't a yes or no, then you're still avoiding it. And I'm wondering why.
I'm questioning right now what happened, what the history books have been teaching us.
There's obviously people from all across the world now, generations of people that say they were there. So what would be the motivation for those individuals to lie collectively as a group? What would be the motivation for them?
Probably money.
You think their motivation might have been money?
You know, there was a compensation scheme for everybody who was in the Holocaust.
There's no way that you won't have realized that would offend a vast number of people.
So what? I don't care who it offends. I'm just asking the question. Why would I be worried about who it offends?
Do you like offending people?
No, I want to know what the truth is about what went on in World War II. I'm questioning as a journalist, as a human being. I think it's important.
That's quite extraordinary stuff that people would tattoo themselves to pretend they were in Auschwitz or something like that. An eminent playwright, an Irish playwright, Dennis Johnson, was a reporter for the BBC when they went into Auschwitz, I think it was, and harrowing accounts of the skeletal bodies of those still surviving.
Of course.
There's so much evidence that's there to behold if Philip Dwyer went looking for it, which he clearly hasn't. Course.
But that's a huge part of the series. Now, I'm not saying Philip Dwyer is far right. People can listen and make up their own minds about that. But conspiracy theories, Pat, play a huge part in all of this. And basically, they're circulated far and wide across social media, across Ireland. And they gradually sort of seed and drip feed these stories, and the conspiracy theories range from the Holocaust to the Great Replacement theory to all sorts of things. And they tend to lure and attract people in. They think, oh, hang on a second, this makes a little bit of sense. But of course, evidence is the absolute enemy of the far right and those extreme ends of the right wing movement, because the second that you put them under any scrutiny, they fall to pieces.
And another interviewee on the program was a man called Keith Woods.
Yes.
Plural Woods, not Keith Wood, the famous rugby player, but rather different kind of person. And he has issues with the idea of being black and also being Irish.
Yeah, and again, he's slightly different, Keith, insofar his. He's young, he's in his mid-20s, he's not running in the local and European elections, which is what makes him, sets him apart from the others. But he has made the digital domain all his. He's not the kind of guy you're going to find in the street. He's at very few protests. He's not knocking on doors trying to spread the right-wing message. Instead, the digital domain is his. And he has up to 250,000 followers. Among the people that follow him, Alex Jones, the world-renowned...
He's been thrown off certain platforms, hasn't
he? Oh, yes, been thrown off many. But very interesting, actually, when Elon Musk took over Twitter, now obviously called X, Keith was one of the people that got an exemption and brought back on. And it's been very interesting. The experts that I've spoken to have said that the social media platforms have been the watchdogs that turned a blind eye. And a lot of the most extreme, you know, whether Keith or not is, I let people make up their mind, but a lot of the most extreme members of far right and right wing extreme Ireland were booted off all these platforms, Pat, but they were brought back onto X, a lot of them.
Mm. Well, let's have a listen to some of what Keith Woods had to say.
I want to know what your criteria for Irishness, nationality, identity is. And can an Irish person be black?
No. Irish is an ethnicity. And what I'm getting at, discussing that, is Irish, any ethnic group, is an extended family.
You don't think it's possible for someone to come from a different country and be Irish? Certainly not be black and Irish. You don't think that's the case?
They can be Irish citizens, but they will never be ethnically Irish.
Okay. So should someone then from, you know, their parents came here from somewhere else, settled, became citizens, should they be representing Ireland in sport?
You know, I think if it was in small numbers, that would be one thing. But I mean, at a certain point when you have national sports, and it's not the character of the countries they're representing, it becomes kind of meaningless. You know, what's even the point of having something like the Olympic Games at that point?
So if 7 of the starting 11 players for the women's international soccer team were black, is that an Irish team?
It has constituent parts that are Irish. But if your team is made up of people from East Africa, you do lose a kind of connection with those people, with those national teams, because they're not the same characters.
So he's quite subtle in his responses to you.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, Keith would be known as sort of the pseudo-intellectual of right-wing Ireland, and as I say, has a huge following all across the globe. Yeah.
Another big area where there might be common ground between some of these right-wing or far-right-wing people is that of homosexuality, LGBT plus trans, Q, and all of that. They have certain views.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, some people that listen to the series will find that there are trends all across it, that any of the, all of the people that we interview in the program have at one point or another been accused of being far right. Now, they fiercely object to that. They will, most of them as well, have been accused of being racist. They fiercely, robustly object to that. A lot of them will also have been accused of being homophobic, transphobic, and they absolutely, resolutely and patently refuse to acknowledge that as well. And then you come into situations like I did with Andy Heisman on O'Connell Street a couple of months back outside the GPO. And I approached.
And who's Andy Heisman?
Andy Heisman, indeed. Yes, Andy Heisman is, he's running in the local and European elections under the banner of a new political party called the Irish People. And he's a very unique character. He was a big protester during COVID, is an anti-vaxxer. He and another gentleman called Ross Lahive, both very outspoken, very well-known members of the right-wing community. And they travel around Ireland on what they call sovereign voyages on a boat, and they spread their very, very controversial message. As I say, both of them are running in the upcoming elections. And this is, I believe you have a clip, this is one of the things that I asked Andy, you know, I said, of the views you have, do you see any of them as being far right or very controversial? And we discussed homosexuality.
You know, I love every man. I love every woman out there. I don't care what race or religion they are. I love the sinner, but I hate the sin. And that's a Christian thing to say. What's wrong with that? Hating sin. I tell you, there's many homosexual people I've talked to out there, and they know they're living an unnatural life. And they accept that. But when we say that they're living an unnatural life, we're told we're homophobic, yet they already know it themselves.
So that's Andy Heisman. In airing these views in your podcast, do you have any kind of qualms at all about giving a platform to views that many people would not approve of at
subscribe all? To, of course. I mean, this is something that we thought long and hard about. I mean, do you give people like these a platform when, you know, a lot of media organizations have decided not to? But basically, after, you know, a lot of discussion and thought about this, we very much thought it was the lesser of the evils, because what is actually happening is, to a degree, people like Andy, members of the right-wing community in Ireland, are using social media as their own network. They've piggybacked it. Essentially, they are broadcasting these messages freely, and their viewpoints, Pat, are going completely unchallenged. And what they do, you see, is they seed all of their viewpoints with just a tiny bit of common sense to lure people in. And you'll so often hear it, won't you? They'll say, well, some of that makes sense. Now, when you drill down into issues such as homosexuality, like I did with Andy, you'll hear him say things like an unnatural life, which of course is stomach churning for a lot of people. But that's what they'll do. So we believe it is the lesser of the evils, especially for people who are running in elections, to know who they are, what they are, what they really believe, their core beliefs and principles. Because as they're operating in this sort of vacuum, they're filling that silence with these messages, and people aren't interrogating them. They're not drilling down to find the evidence, and people might vote for them.
Are they finding fertile ground then in the electorate? Because you have people who voted against the Eighth Amendment. You've got people who voted against marriage equality. And they might be saying, well, where do I go now? Yeah. Fianna Fáil doesn't represent me. Fine Gael doesn't represent me. Yeah. They've now joined the Liberals, right?
Yeah.
Not even in the centre, but maybe slightly left of centre on those social issues.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So are they? Have they got fertile ground to plough?
It seems so. It seems so. I mean, a huge part of the series is not just interviewing these particular individuals, but finding out how the far right, the ideology of the far right, has infiltrated Ireland. And there was one particularly brilliant contributor, Dr. Barry Cannon, down at Maynooth University, who's a senior lecturer and assistant professor in sociology. And he said that if you look back into the recent past in Ireland, Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil were sort of the guardians of conservatism, the guardians of tradition. And then you move forward a little bit, same-sex marriage, abortion, both referendums, both obviously enough were approved and voted in. But what he said was a lot of people were set adrift there. A lot of people didn't vote for those and have sort of been forgotten. And as a result, movements such as Right Wing Ireland and the extreme ends of that sometimes are hoovering up and attracting these people, because what they're saying is, let's look after us first. Let's look after Catholic, conservative traditions and values. Ireland first. Ireland belongs to the Irish. Ireland is full. And all of these different narratives that are flinging and spinning around Right Wing Ireland, but also have been seeded by the far right.
Now, as part of making the programme, you attended a protest in North Dublin undercover. Mm-hmm. Things went a bit awry.
They did.
What happened?
Yeah, so the thinking here was, so a lot of people, anyone that listens to the news, Pat, radio, TV, whatever, you will have heard of blockades and protests outside what's called IPAS centres, which is where asylum seekers go to be looked after whilst their applications are being approved. Now, all across the country, locals have been setting up protests and blockades outside these places because they haven't wanted them in their towns. Now, there's many reasons why they don't want asylum seekers and international protection applicants in their towns. Resources is one. They don't want all the resources of small towns to be swallowed up. Sometimes they're occupying the only hotel. So in the view of experts and analysts and of these individuals, there are very legitimate concerns sometimes for not wanting their town to be where asylum seekers are placed. But what we had realised over the course of our research was that far-right figures and agitators to a degree were infiltrating these local protests with a view essentially to creating a much wider narrative, which is asylum seekers out, you know, immigrants out, etc. And it gets quite dark and quite nasty when that narrative infiltrates these particular protests. So what we decided to do, rather than just walk in with a microphone as a journalist and say, why are you here? Because what I was doing, what I was hearing, what I found that was the people were saying the same things, were concerned citizens, were worried about resources. So I thought to myself, as someone with a lot of undercover experience over the years, why don't we go in as counter-protesters, which is very common. And what counter-protesters do generally is they bring flags, and there would be, you know, statements on those flags, such as no to racism, this is my home too, etc., etc. So I and two other undercover journalists decided to do this. We did this in North Dublin. We landed at a blockade. We uncovered our flags. Now, we were wearing disguises. I had to be undercover, but also it's very common for counter-protesters to do that as well, because members of sort of right-wing Ireland tend to publish the information and the faces of people that they don't agree with, their worldview, etc. You asked me what happened. Well, my prediction for the day, Pat, was that maybe it might get verbally heated, that they might say some things, there might be exchanges, and we would find out the real and the core reasons why they were there. Was there far-right involvement? Was there some degree of racism, etc.? That's what I really wanted to know. But it got very heated very, very, very quickly, to the point that we needed to get out of there. I was tripped to the ground. I cut my hand. I cut my knee. There was security there on the day. The other two guys, obviously enough, were in very similar situations. They were trying to grab our scarves. They were trying to grab our flags. It changed the atmosphere completely, unexpectedly. I did not expect that to happen. And that's why it went awry. Yeah.
Mm. There was, in the wake of that, criticism of the station for its approach. Yeah. What do you say to that?
Yeah, well, we needed, in my view, and obviously in the view also of the producers of the programme, we needed to know the real reasons why people protest. We knew 9 out of 10 reasons, but was there an underlying reason? Was there something there in those particular protests that we weren't hearing about? Was there far-right involvement? Were the ideas of the far-right within those protests? And interestingly, one of the journalists that was with me, he is originally from Pakistan. And as we were standing there, we just unraveled our flags. And there was some racist slander that was directed at him almost immediately. So it did feel as if, hang on a second, there is another element here. And that was an isolated incident. That was all they said. But counter-protesting is very common, is absolutely legitimate. It happens a lot in Ireland and elsewhere. And we thought the only real way we were going to get the absolute unvetted truth of why people do this type of thing outside of concerned locals, we had to do that.
I mean, you could be charged with showing a red rag to a bull, you know, where people are protesting outside a proposed IPAS centre and you bring along someone who's clearly not what they would regard as being ethnically Irish.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I understand what you mean. But as I say, to make absolutely sure that we got the answers we needed, we thought it was the best strategy. But also, when you're doing undercover work, you have to be very strict in how you behave. You don't agitate, you don't aggravate, you basically say nothing and you just observe. And the fact that one of the journalists, you know, is from Pakistan, I mean, he's from where he's from. And if there was no underlying or latent racism at all present in that particular protest, it wouldn't have mattered.
Paul Connolly, investigative journalist and author of this new podcast, Inside Ireland's Rising Right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Pat.
And if you want to find that podcast, you can find it on the Newstalk app powered by Go Loud or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on Newstalk.